Welcome to Modern Practice. I'm your host, Dr. Tom Villanueva. And on this episode, we'll continue our discussion with Dr. Robert Dean and Katie Davis on advancing team culture. Let's talk about scope of practice issues that came up in the forefront during the pandemic itself. How do you deal with these issues?
In the previous episode, we did talk about how scope of practice really can impact the ability of a team to function at its highest ability. If we look at some of the data that we have from our Vizient Clinical Team Insights program, we found that 63% of clinics, so well over half, have advanced practice providers completing FMLA paperwork, while 70% of the clinics have physicians doing this as well. So those are some pretty loud numbers that tell us how our providers are spending their time. The implications of this are pretty significant. We know that our providers are happier when they're able to provide at their highest ability. So it's really important to understand at your organization how your providers are spending their time. Is that something that a medical assistant might be able to take on to start completion of maybe some of the FMLA paperwork or something? COVID has really provided an opportunity for states to re-examine restrictive scope of practice. We've seen a lot of changes that were made in an emergency situation when COVID first emerged. A couple of other components that I think can be really critical to addressing scope of practice to ensure that each team member can practice at their highest ability include transition of practice programs and strong onboarding, where a lot of those discussions can happen when employees are new to the organization. And then finally, taking it back even farther to academic practice partnerships, where organizations can work with schools that are going to be sending their students, soon to be graduates, to work at your organization to understand and have a continuous feedback loop between the academic setting and the practice setting so that everybody's really on the same page.
Yeah, and I'm going to link this discussion back to having effective teams, which we covered in the first podcast. Really, scope of practice can be an issue in several of the factors we said are necessary to have an effective team. So if people really don't understand the roles, responsibility, training, and competency of other teammates, it can impact the function of the team. If they don't understand that those competencies and roles contribute to the overall goals of the team, it can really compromise the team. And if they don't trust each other that that person is actually trained and able to do that job, or I'm going to allow them to do the job, in many cases as a physician, it can really impact the effectiveness of the team. And I say this because in working across the country, I've seen a great variation in the understanding of physicians, nurses, APPs of what each other's roles are, how they contribute, and how they can work effectively as a team. So with the expansion of scope of practice by CMS early on in the pandemic, with the expansion of the reimbursement rules for APPs to go along with that expansion of scope of practice, we've seen this somewhat heightened in many areas. Higher levels of distrust, higher levels of suspicion that maybe the APP, the advanced practice provider, is only working for themselves, not within a team, and physicians and nurses not understanding those roles. So it really amplifies the need for clear communication on what these individuals can do, how they contribute to the overall team function, how they contribute to the overall team goals, and ultimately to patient care.
Robert, as you're talking about the tie between communication and scope of practice, I keep thinking of an article I read from New England Journal of Medicine Catalyst, where they encourage, in talking about teams, there's a quote that has really stuck with me and keeps coming to top of mind as we have this conversation. And that is, what do I bring? What do you bring? And what do we need? And I think that hits on a couple of things sort of nicely, bringing all of these different topics that we're talking about together: communication, trust, scope of practice, and really willingness to have a dialogue and allow each team member to practice at their highest ability and bring their best selves to work for the patient.
I see that as key, but what's the role of leadership?
I spoke to this a little bit earlier. I think really leadership sets the example. They work with others to develop the values of the organization. They exemplify those values. They work together as a team and let others see that. I know that back before I joined Vizient, if I and the CNO did daily rounds, so the CMO and CNO doing rounds together, it really exemplifies to the rest of the clinical workforce that we're a team. You have to live those values, and then you have to set the expectation that others will live those values. So I think leadership is foundational to really establishing team-based care as part of the culture and expectations of your organization.
Robert, I agree, and will add that I think the role of leadership is to be visible, transparent, and accessible, but also to create a psychologically safe environment. In a survey that was conducted in March and April, only 44% of healthcare workers agreed that their organization cared about their well-being. So that's an alarming number. Almost half of healthcare workers. When we think about creating a psychologically safe environment, I think that's a really, really telling statistic and a message to leadership that you need to make sure that your staff knows what you're doing to create that psychologically safe environment.
What are the core competencies of those who excel in team-based care approach?
There is the Interprofessional Education Collaborative, also known as IPEC, that actually have four core competencies for interprofessional collaborative practice that I think answer this question really nicely. First is working with individuals of other professions to maintain a climate of mutual respect, using knowledge of one's own role and those of other professions to assess and address healthcare needs of patients. Three is communicating with patients, families, communities, and professionals in health and other fields. And then lastly, applying relationship building values and principles of team dynamics to perform effectively in different team roles to plan, deliver, and evaluate patient population-centered care.
In addition, Tom, I would say that there's some personal/professional competencies that are necessary, and not only necessary, but can be developed with time, beginning with emotional intelligence. So people working in a team environment not only need a high degree of self-awareness in terms of how they're coming across, but they also need social awareness and what's appropriate when in terms of statements they make, interventions they may do, initiatives they may undertake. So emotional intelligence is key for different people on the team to really create a well-functioning team. And this isn't always been required to get into your profession. There really aren't many professional schools that say, I want somebody with a high degree of emotional intelligence or at least test for it when they come in. So that's why I say it's something that needs to be an expectation set. You need to help people develop that awareness. You need to help people develop that emotional intelligence and then communication skills. If you can't effectively communicate what you're thinking, what you're trying to achieve, if you can't listen well to what others are saying and understand it and how it may impact you, the patient, and the team, those are skills that you really need to develop along with the emotional intelligence skills. There has been great research into this field. There are many active steps that can be taken to improve team-based care, to understand role clarity, goals, communication, et cetera, as we've touched on. So I think it's something that organizations should evaluate. Are we where we want to be with our team-based care? If not, what interventions can we take to help build that team-based environment and approach that not only from the team standpoint, but from the patient and the individual care provider standpoint. So a very timely topic. I'm glad we covered it. And I'm hoping that people will see that there's a lot of room for opportunity to improve team-based care if they're not where they want to be.
Do you guys have any examples?
One that really comes to mind is from Northwestern Memorial Hospital in Chicago, where the supply chain distribution and logistics team built a COVID-19 warehousing and logistics plan in one day and activated it immediately. It included four major supply hubs across four hospitals and a transportation network to get emergency supplies to all sites and community partners where and when they were needed. So to plan out an operation like that in a day and activate it immediately is just outstanding, and I think highlights an incredible example of a team coming together. I'm sure many of us have heard, at least I know I have, Tom, I'm sure you have many times over, we have sort of reinvented the way that we define timelines. So things that have been done in a matter of hours, days, or weeks that we never thought possible before. And I think this is a great example. So in my opinion, and certainly my hope, is that we've sort of set a new bar in what our teams are capable of doing and accomplishing in a day, in a shift, in a week, in a month, because we've seen what these incredible, incredible teams are capable of.
So what are the attributes of a truly functional team-based culture?
I think they're sort of twofold. One, there are key characteristics that are foundational to any team. And then we talk about teams that are functioning during crisis. The foundational components and characteristics of any team include shared goals, clear roles, mutual trust among the team, and that of course includes the patient, very strong and effective communication, and then of course a way to measure processes and outcomes to ensure that the team continues to grow and evolve and improve where opportunities arise. In times of crisis, I think some additional characteristics and themes emerge, which include agility, even more communication, and then of course trust in a new way to ensure that psychological safety, which of course is absolutely critical on any team, but even more so during crisis.
So Katie, virtual health also came into the forefront during the pandemic. Can you tell us how we can use technology to advance team culture?
Absolutely. We have seen technology almost become, in theory, another member of the team in some ways. So a couple of things that it's certainly comes with its own challenges, but also presents a lot of opportunities. First and foremost, I think technology allows for a very inclusive environment. If you think about many organizations converted to virtual rounds when COVID emerged so that students could attend and other non-essential personnel, it was this phenomenal educational opportunity and a chance to include individuals that normally would be restricted by physical space on daily rounds. We have seen caregivers at the front lines incorporating things like FaceTime or video chat so that patients can not only connect with their loved ones because of limited visitor restrictions due to COVID, but we had a really incredible story from a team at Vidant Health where there was a patient that was at the end of life, and this patient had 11 children, and the frontline staff was able to connect this patient not only through FaceTime, but also was able to coordinate bringing the patient and the family to the window so that they could see one another, which is a heartbreaking story, but also inspiring to think that the frontline staff came together and really treating the patient as at the center of the team to do what's best for them. Tom, do you have anything else to add?
Yeah, actually, I lied. You know, Katie, in addition to that, we learned during our previous episodes with Kelly Goodson and Mark Larson from SG2 and Vizient, all in reference to patient engagement. Virtual care, when it comes to follow-up, actually patients want to see their own providers. They welcome their established providers, whether they be an APP or even a physician, versus new providers. So it's another way of advancing the team. Thank you, Katie. Any final thoughts?
I think that we have seen the incredible ability of healthcare teams to come together in ways that we've never seen before, that we've truly only talked about for many, many years. My hope is that the wins that we have seen and these advances that teams have made every day for our patients continue once we return to whatever the quote new normal looks like. Teams have demonstrated what they're capable of, and my hope is that they just continue to challenge the status quo and bring their best selves to work and create an environment where each team member can truly practice at their highest ability.
Robert and Katie, we've reached the end of our discussion. I appreciate your insights. And to our listeners, please join us for other Modern Practice Podcasts on the Vizient Medical Leadership Channel. Subscribe today, like us, or send us your comments. And also please listen and subscribe to SG2 Perspectives, the podcast on the latest in healthcare strategies. I'm Dr. Tom Villanueva. Thanks for listening.